On Deck Radio, wall-to-wall baseball talk. With Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
The Twins are going to win the World Series. The Twins have won it.
Covering the diamond like the world's biggest rain tarp, Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman. On Deck Radio with 105 The Ticket.
Down, and now here's Ackley. Driven to right. Hit well. Hunter through the wall. Leaps and makes a catch. He's scheduled to pitch. Double play grounded. Nice time to get a ball hit on the ground. Boy, Santana gunned that throw over there. The Indians in his last. And he picks up a strikeout of Smith. Two away. And a couple of strikeouts for Hughes. Swing and a miss. That ends the inning. Nice fastball. Takes care of Cruz. Miss. Zanino gone. Seager strikes out.
He has a little breather. And for the third time, Bill Hughes strikes out Zanino.
Wow, you'd think they'd won that ball game last night, guys.
Well, you're talking about last week, the time of the game, the 8 minutes you were worried about taking off, Wags. Well, you had a two-hour game last night.
No, I like it.
Stud pitchers,
I wasn't worried about
doing
it.
Doing what they're supposed to do, throw strikes, get the ball back from the catcher, let it fly. Great game.
I wasn't
great
worried
game to watch. I know you weren't watching baseball for the last week
well,
and
guys,
a half.
Okay, so I'm completely downshifting out of Stanley Cup playoff, and I got to get to the baseball side
sure.
of things. And you called me just frothing.
Oh, well, you were quite peppy today. And
anytime the Wild win, it's like, oh my God, there's a new personality in the booth.
Where'd this guy
so
come from?
So you're saying
from?
I'm a little bipolar?
Is that
well, it's excellent. I mean, I'm happy the Wild pulled it off last night. I was watching it, too. Flipping back and forth. And,
I mean, you weren't watching Bruce Jenner?
Yeah, I neglected that totally. But I tell you what, Hughes threw a great game. Hernandez threw a great game. And Gino was busy watching the 1976.
I wanted to see the decathlon.
Bruce, he refers to himself now as her. Oh, my word. I got to come clean
his
on that. I did record
very
it.
Nice. I saw him on commercial today. He had nice
tough.
Lips.
It's tough to take. I mean, I just get it. But I recorded that deal because I needed to see it. So I watched it after the Wild and Twins as I was flipping between the two. And we'll leave that social commentary to Ben Holson and Mike Morris because I know Radioactive Sports Dave Helmer, who's behind the board with us today, is going to be talking in full on that. Is that correct? They're breaking it down on Monday?
I think they're going to reference it quite a bit.
You know what the sad part is? Their numbers are going to soar. Aren't they?
No comment.
Well, you were watching it, so there you go. Enough said there. Well, I've got great news before we get into the baseball. The Minnesota Vikings announced their schedule. We're not talking about that today.
Okay.
So the Twins have a week in Kansas City, and then they head out to Seattle.
What is it about Seattle
that seems to be such a tough place for visiting teams to play? And I mean that. It doesn't matter how good or bad they are. It seems like it's tough to pick up wins.
Well, I think, first of all, two-hour time change, adjustment in your schedule.
They had an off day.
Yeah, they did have an off day. But
off day in Seattle.
I'm just, you know.
You're grasping at straws.
Yeah, well, you got an off day in Seattle and two-hour time change.
Puget Sound.
They're playing pretty good baseball. They just got swept. There's trouble in Seattle. It seems like whenever the team goes in that direction, the spectrum is going the other way. It's not; they're not on an upswing.
Well, Seattle's not a great team either, which is, you know.
But they got a great pitcher who threw yesterday.
You have an absolute stud in King Felix. He's one of those guys that, you know, you look at the numbers that Phil Hughes has, 0-4, but look at the starting pitchers that he had to face.
It's
and
pretty tough.
If you're the number one guy on the Twins, those are the guys you're going to face. So he threw a gem as well, one terrible pitch to Nelson Cruz, but other than that, great, great game.
Guys, how does that play on you as a number one when you're losing like that against Sale, Price, King Felix? I mean, are you able to not
Well, you know
let
your
that...
margin of error is very, very slight.
But you can't let that bother you, right?
No, he did his job. I mean, you give up one or two runs per game, probably against Felix is not going to work. Mm-hmm. But any other pitcher, even a Sales, he's not a King Felix to me. King Felix is one of the top two or three pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, he is. And you know, just like Gino said, and just like you, if you listen to Bert and those guys who were number one pitchers, they challenge each other to keep the game close and go pitch to pitch with one another. And the first side that breaks, you know, the other guy says, well, I'm going to keep it right here. It's one of those battles that as a hitter, you're scratching for a single. You're hoping to get one on the board. Defense is going to be key. And unfortunately, the Twins just, whatever offensive chance they had, first and third, nobody out, they just did not execute.
But as a teammate, you know, when guys like Felix are on the mound, you think you're going to win the game.
Yeah.
No matter what their record was the whole year or the previous start, you think you're going to have a real good chance. And I think the Twins feel that way about Hughes.
Yes.
He's pitched okay to better than okay. Mm-hmm. Nothing to show for it, but I think that's what the Twins want from their other guys outside of you. Give me a chance. Get in a dugout first inning. Give me a shot that I think I'm going to be able to win this particular game.
Well, Mike Pelfrey leads the team in ERA with a 2.45, and he gave him a chance the other day. What was interesting about his outing in Kansas City was his fastball sometimes hit the 95 marker, but was really averaging, hovering in the 92.5, 93, which is way better than it was prior to his other 2 years.
He was ramped up from Kansas City. You know, that's from he pitched at Wichita State, so he was ramped up, had family in there. And
yep.
As he admitted after the game, his control wasn't real good the first few innings.
Effectively wild,
yeah.
Eh?
Then he picked it up. His MPH got up real good. His split was real good. And he pitched one of the better games he's pitched in a Twin uniforms, if not the best.
You know what I liked about Gino? And you mentioned the Fighting Royals earlier. He drilled two guys in that game. And, of course, he patted his chest, my bat. But he wasn't afraid to challenge hard inside.
Thank you.
And he pounded and pounded. And if you hit a guy, you know, you've had your chest. Somehow the Royals haven't fought the Twins. The Twins have hit four or five of guys.
The Twins have hit more Royals players and beaten the Royals more than any team has this year. Yet they're the only one that's come out, quote, unscathed.
And there's a difference in the way you go about it. And, again, Pelfrey, I was happy for him. Seven innings. He set a standard right there. Boom. He delivered. This offense has got to turn the corner somehow, some way. We can't have seven guys hitting below 230.
What's holding that up?
The weather's changed. It's gotten warmer.
But, I mean, does this feed itself? I mean, when you're hot, everybody seems to get hotter. I mean, is it one of those things when you're getting on and the table setters are doing their jobs and the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys? I mean, is it all cyclical?
I think hitting is definitely contagious. That's like anything else in sports. If you've got a group of guys or, you know, coming together as a unit, it's contagious. They're just not playing very well offensively right now, and they're putting a lot of pressure on their staff, which, you know, going into this year, we didn't really think that highly of because of this Santana and Nolasco situation.
Yep.
So they're putting a lot of pressure on their pitching staff, and they're just not coming through with clutch hits. And I know we're going to talk about this thing, the stealing of home with the bases loaded.
Yeah.
That might have been part of the reason. We got Vargas up there, you know, with the bases loaded,
a
power guy. You know, typically that's not a stolen base opportunity, but I think.
What was your reaction when you saw that?
I had a flashback to the minor league days when I let Torrey steal home a couple of times. I think if the guy hadn't made a perfect throw, he's safe. If he throws that ball chest high, he slides underneath the tag. But the ball was thrown right off the ground.
And it was still a close play.
And it was still a close play. So, you know, when he took off, my eyes got big. I hoped he was going to make it. First thing I thought was who the hitter was. And I went Vargas. And I went, well, should he have gone? So right then, I wanted him to go, and then I changed my mind.
And you usually do it with a left-handed pitcher and maybe a right-handed hitter to give you a better view or lack of a view for the pitching and the catching. But, you know, when Paul Molitor after the game said I gave him the nod, yeah, he definitely did, yes. But I think he gave him the nod because I think he thought Torrey said, I'm 1,000% sure I can steal home.
Well, that's
quickly. And that's the thing. If you're going to steal that, You better be right. And
Torrey, he didn't get a blast off start. He went from a standstill.
And that's what Paul Molitor was saying afterwards. Yeah. If he gets a better running start, he's in. But on top of that, he also, quickly jumped in and said, yeah, I was all over that. And, you know, there was no, he backed up his player. And I thought that was great, which lends me to this next topic. You know, I mean, what are we, 2, 3 weeks into the season, and we've seen some learning curves from the manager. And, I mean, overall, your assessments of where he's been so far from pulling the triggers and doing the things he needs to do.
First off, Gene, thanks. I think Molly is letting the guys play. I think he's shuffling the players in, trying to find a hot coal, so to speak. The pitching, as we said earlier, I think the rotation is settled in. He's extended some guys, which I like to see. And he's also challenged that bullpen a little bit.
When you say extended, meaning they don't get to the 97 pitch.
Seven innings.
They don't get to the magical 97 pitch plateau regardless of how well they're throwing and they're out, right?
Right. It's, trying to say, okay, quality start, six innings. Well, the guy's got another one. Go get him. You know, go get him, son. Mm-hmm. So I like that part of Molly. I think he's letting his coaches coach right now, Gino. Yeah. And from that point, I think there's been some progress.
And he's still trying to find his team, the personality of his team. He's been extremely positive in his post-game interviews, even after bad games. He's not been singling one or two guys out. He's overall talking about the defense, the offense, and the pitching staff. So I think he's still trying to find it. I mean, I like the fact that he tried to fiddle with the lineup a little bit. Obviously, in the beginning of the year, the first week was a nightmare for him, and he's trying to recruit from that a little bit, too, mentally. And I think he's done a good job of trying to rein it in a little bit and have those guys play better baseball all around. I like it.
Take the first week out, and it's a 500 ball club at this stage.
Yeah. Gino, I want to just kind of talk about what we were off the air. We're discussing, we were talking about Escobar and Santana.
Right.
And I said to Gino, I said, you know, I saw Escobar play shortstop. I didn't really see Santana play shortstop. And so he was telling me a little bit about the differential. Well, I don't know what it is, but right now neither one of them are comfortable.
That's what it looks like from the TV side, doesn't it? Yeah. And one of the things about Santana, he had such a good year offensively. I think as an outfielder, you take a lot less pressure into the batter's box. You don't have to think so much. I think Danny brought that up last week.
Yeah.
Danny Gladden. You know, shortstop, you're the leader of the infield. You're going to get a lot of plays involved in a lot of plays during the game. I think he doesn't look real comfortable in the batter's box, and they need him to be that guy to get on base for the Joe Mauers, for the Vargases, for the Arcias.
I want to continue that discussion a little bit further, and maybe we can even talk to George Samus, the manager of the St. Paul Saints, who will be joining us next, what he would do in that situation, since he's actually pulling the trigger and managing right now as well. It's not like neither one of the two of you aren't, but why not get a third opinion?
Oh, no, not at all.
All that continues. On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. On Deck Radio continues this Saturday morning on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket, along with David Helmer behind the boards and Gene Larkin and Al Newman. I'm Pete Wagner. We are pleased to bring in our next guest, George Samus, the manager of the St. Paul Saints. Is about a week, 2 weeks away from the start of everything, right?
Yeah. A couple of weeks, beautiful ballpark.
New ballpark.
Yes, Mr. Samus is in town.
George, thanks for joining us this morning.
How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Terrific. Thank you. So let's get out of the chute with the new ballpark. Have you been able to really work your way through the confines? And how do you think that that facility is going to play?
You know, it's I've been seen a lot of minor league parks over the years. And, I saw this one, a couple months ago. And this is one of the nicest places I've ever seen. This ballpark, it's something else. And we were in Midway all those years, and obviously, in Midway, it was a great atmosphere there, and, a lot of exciting moments there, but to go into CHS it's special, and we're very fortunate to be there.
George, do you have your manager's office all laid out right now with the plush furniture, the nice recliner?
Well, I'm flying in tomorrow morning, so I haven't seen it yet. So
I finally made it here, right?
Yeah, it's. I'm so looking forward to it because I'm sure you guys have seen my office at Midway over the years, and it was so little, and
no privacy.
It is what it is. Though. Don't complain about it, and it's just. But to go into this place, it's exciting.
Hey, George, Newman here. It's going to be fun to work with you guys in spring training here in a couple of weeks. But I wanted to ask you, are you the manager and general manager? Do you acquire the talent? How do you guys go about getting your players?
Yes. Obviously, I'm on the field and getting the players. I mean, that's a lot of the fun doing that. And it's just like college recruiting. We're all going after the same players. And you go after these guys and try to get the best guys you can, and you win some, you lose some, and But I enjoy that part of it, getting the players.
Why don't you tell us about the new acquisition, the latest pickup you guys had. You got a couple of good players. Give us a little rundown on a couple of your star players.
Yeah, we had signed last year. Ian Gack was a player in our league. He had 349 with 27 home runs. We had signed him earlier in the off season and a big bat, a nice big cleanup hitter for us. But then we lost him to Mexico a month ago, so he was down there for a while and realized that he'd rather be back up here with us. So he's coming back with us, and it's a big bat to have. And he's going to be a crowd favorite. They're going to like him, and you're going to see a guy that can swing the bat, hit him pretty far too. And also Mike Kwasnicka. I mean, people probably know him from the University of Minnesota. Former first rounder, was in Double A with the Twins last year, and so we have him as well. He'd be a solid outfielder for us. And the funny story with that, when I was in A-ball with the Twins, I came up, with the Twins, and in A-ball, I played with his dad. We came up in the minors together. And
Small window.
Well, I babysitted Mike when he was 3 years old.
No way! I guess the role hasn't changed.
Yeah, don't sell him out to his teammates. Don't do it.
Yeah, it's a funny story, and it's nice to have him, and I think he'll be a real good player for us.
So when you get to the pitching staff, your comfort level with what you have coming in right now?
A lot of these guys that we have signed, or maybe half of them, you haven't seen them. So you never know what you're getting. Like I said, when these guys get released from spring training, there's some AAA guys, some AA guys, some A-ball guys. And you just look, you look, what you see on paper, and you try to get reports from them, from organizations, and but you really never know what you get until they get there and you see them, because we really don't see these players, because most of the players you get, they're released out of spring training, at the end of March.
So what happens then is you essentially just get a list of guys that are available, you see their credentials, and then start making phone calls? Is that typically what happens, or what's the process?
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. I mean, I have stacks and stacks of releases here, and there's hundreds and hundreds of guys that get released. But again, it's a free for all, and everybody goes after these guys. And the people that aren't familiar with independent ball, it's not the end of the road. It's just a bump in the road, is what it is. Because there are a lot of players, a lot of AAA, AA players that maybe got bumped out by numbers that come and play with us. And Caleb Thielbar is.
I was just getting ready to say that. George, you had Thielbar.
Yeah, you know what? Caleb Thielbar, this is a guy that, he was 24 years old. He was in low A ball. I guess he had a tough year, and the Brewers released him. He came to our spring training without even going to camp with anybody. He came in, he was making $900 a month. That's what he was making for us. And this guy is a perfect example of, anybody can do it. Started out, did well for us. The Twins came out and saw him because they heard good things, and we told them good things, and they saw him. They took him in August, and he just went right up that minor league system and got to the big leagues, and he's been there for years, 3 years. And Mark Hamburg is another guy that pitched for us 2 years ago that had a real good camp with the Twins and almost made their team out of spring training. And he's in AAA as well now. So, I mean, who knows? You may be seeing him, in Minnesota here pretty soon as well. So, again, it's just a bump in the road, and there's some quality players that play in our league.
George, is there a player's salary cap in the independent league, or are you allowed to pay each guy based on, what you think they're worth in the organization, like Major League Baseball?
Yeah, there's definitely a salary cap, and you try to be as fair as you can with these guys, but you got to fit them under the cap, and, some guys make decent money, and some guys don't, and it's a tough thing with a salary cap. And again, when you're competing with so many other teams.
Hey, George, Al Newman again. Hey, I just wanted to give a little shout out to some of your helpers. I know you have a former major league pitcher. Leitenberg is your pitching coach. And then your equipment manager, Luck, I got to give him a shout out because he treats me like a king whenever I come around there. So I just wanted to throw their names out there. A former assistant general manager when I was with the Twins, Derek Shears. Is your general manager there? Just tell me how important it is for those guys in their roles with the Saints.
you know, they do a great job, and, you know, they're good people to work with, and Derek does a great job, and obviously with, look at the stadium, how beautiful it is, and Kerry Lightbridge's been our pitching coach for 3 years, and he pitched in the big leagues for a while. I know Gene knows him pretty well, and, you know, he's a great guy to have, and Ed Lucas, he's a great clubby, you know, he'll do anything, and you know, he'll do anything for any of us.
Sure.
He's always there, working them, what, 16-hour days, and, you know, 18-hour days, whatever it turns out to be, but we have some good people with us, and, you know, I'm looking forward to flying in tomorrow morning, and I'm excited I'm flying in the morning because I heard the Wild game got moved to 2 o'clock.
Yeah, it did.
Land in the morning, get settled in, and watch that. That's a great story, too. So, I mean, I hope they can win that game 6 tomorrow and move on to the next round.
That would be outstanding. George, Pete Wagner here. Question for you as far as being the field manager. You're also the general manager, correct, with the player personnel?
Yes, I get the players, yes.
How tough is it to, you know, juggle both? I mean, the good part is these guys are falling within the likeness of what you like, and I mean, does it get tough to manage that time in both roles?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a tough thing. It's just not showing up in the field and then managing. You're always on the phone, you're always, you know, every day you're looking at releases and you're trying to get the best possible players in there, and some work out and some don't, and but hey, when things don't go right, I'm the one that's got the player, so it's on me, and you know, I'm the one that brings them in, and we've had a couple tough years, and we need to turn it around and get back to where we were before, and what a better way to start going into the new ballpark, and this place is something, and you know, when people come to see this place, it's a special place, and the fans, you know, they deserve a championship, and we're going to try to give it to them this year.
George, obviously St. Paul is a great new stadium. What is your best visiting park that you'd like to go visit and play in because of the amenities and the crowd and all that good stuff?
You know, there's some beautiful places around our league as well. The stadium in Gary, Indiana is beautiful, and Winnipeg's beautiful. Lincoln, Nebraska is right there outside where the University of Nebraska football stadium. There's some beautiful places, and you know, but now with ours, I think ours is a little bit better, and the league gets better and better every year, and it's quality places to play, and you know, and we're looking for a shortstop. So, Al,
if you're looking at this body, man, I can cover very little range right now. But hey, George, last for me, what's it like to work with Vic and Bill Murray? You know, back and forth over the phones, and then
your
relationship with them, because it's got to be somewhat jovial, but yet it's a business relationship.
Yeah, they're great to work with, and it's on from ownership to general manager. They're great people to be with, and you know, Bill Murray, you know, I've met him a few times. He's been around a few times, and just what you see him in the movies, well, that's the way he is. He's a great guy. He's funny, and you just sit there and talk to him. And I remember when we were talking one time, we were sitting in my office talking, and he was talking about how when he was younger, when he was at that game, Reggie Jackson hit the 3 home runs in Yankee Stadium, and it's just a great guy just to sit down and talk to, and you know, so. The way you see him, Bill Murray, in the movies is the way he is. He's an awesome guy to be around.
Well, you think of Bill Murray, you think, now that hurts, ma'am, and now I know I don't want to take you or your luggage to the airport. George, one of the topics we talked about was Danny Santana and Escobar for the Twins at shortstop and the hitting and how things are. What we knew is that Escobar was very comfortable at short last year and hit well. And that Santana came in, and from Gino's perspective, that maybe there's less pressure in the outfield, and it didn't impact the hitting. It seems like they're both pressing a little bit. If you were managing, would you move Danny Santana to what's obviously a little bit of an issue at center field and get Escobar settled in at short, or what would you do in that situation?
You know, in this business, there's some tough decisions, and, you know, I can have an opinion on something, or, you know, somebody else can have an opinion on it. Doesn't mean we're right. It's just the way we feel about it. And but Santana, he did pretty good last year, right? He was up there for a while, and even the leadoff spot. And I even went to a game last year and saw him, and he looks like a good player. But we're only a few weeks in, so it is a long season. And sometimes if he's better at short, it'll work out that way. If he's better in the outfield, it'll play itself out eventually. But you know, I know they're off to maybe a slow start, but it is a long season, and mean, he could have a hitting streak and make a change like that.
So you're preaching patience for sure. So, well, we're looking forward to coming out to your new park. It's going to be awesome. And I want to thank you for joining us here today. And we'll be catching up with you throughout the year when you're available.
Thank you, George.
Hey, take it easy, okay, buddy. I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks for it. Okay, thanks for having me. Go wild.
Yep.
Absolutely. George Samus Gene is just so wild out, he's done.
No, I love the wild.
All right.
Rangers wild. Rangers wild final.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no. Here we go again. Oh,
that's my guy,
more
Mr.
baseball Hala. Talk. On Deck Radio, Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. I took a little bit more of a, I can't say newer version of music today, but I'm trying to get a more of a blend for you two.
Anytime the Wild win a big game, I know the music is going to be real, real upbeat.
You two came in and you could not believe what you were hearing.
If the Wild had lost last night, we might not have had a baseball
I'll
show.
Tell you what, we wouldn't have a show.
I was sitting there last night.
Thank God the Wild scored two goals.
At 1-0 St. Louis, I was sitting there staring blankly at the TV because we all saw the graphic, and I want to ask you about that in baseball too. No team has won a game in this series after being scored on first, and you know, over the course of the past 27 games or 17 games, whatever, one win, whatever. Okay. Do you think that in broadcasts you can overdo those types of statistics?
Really, with that question?
I mean, can we stop?
Does a player ever care about the numbers going into a game?
No.
Every game is unique.
But why do they have a need to fire this information?
Who, the broadcasting people?
Yeah,
well,
like,
I'll tell you what, when they said it, I turned the channel.
I know you did!
I said no need
you
to watch
You went straight
this
to
game.
Bruce Jenner. I mean, yeah. You went to the Twins. So, but
it just gets the people and the fans thinking about, you know,
negative stuff.
Negative stuff, and that's part of watching and viewing a game, regardless of the sport. But
or
as
they're
a player,
they're making
you don't
history.
Care. You don't care what has happened in the past. You
no.
don't go. So you're telling me that on the Wild bench, oh, they scored the first goal. Why should we even play?
Okay, as players, when reporters come up and say, you know, nobody's. How do you handle that mentally? Do you say shut up? Or do you just say, yeah, whatever?
That's why you hear so many players go, nobody believed we could get it done. Just like that, you know.
Well, according
first
to players.
Goal, we're toast. Players got no shot.
Because they've already announced it.
Yes,
and they're writing about it, and it's being spoken, and there's all sorts of things. And in baseball, that's got to get even worse.
This is what I talked about with the Paul Mahler interviews after the game. He gets some questions that are just off the wall, and I always say, how is he going to even respond
to
that?
Give me an example of an off-the-wall question. I love these. These
are great. No, I mean,
give me one. Just give me one that would bug you. Go back to your playing days.
How about the, how do you feel?
Yeah.
How do you think I feel?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
We lost.
I feel, you know, I pitched a three-hitter, and I lost 2-0. And I pitched a 4-8, I lost 2-0. I did everything I could, but the guy's going to want to say, well, why did your offense fail you? Well, it's part of the game. We're a team. You're going to get the old cliche answers, and it's the correct way to answer. And then you get criticized for just being too cliche-like in your post-game interviews.
Do we interview these guys too much?
Of course.
I mean, it's over the top now, isn't
it? First thing I thought the other day, one of the young players, I think it was Robinson, struck out, ball got away from the catcher. He didn't run towards first. I said, somebody's going to ask Molly. So the young players are not going to hustle. I thought you were going to require them to hustle. That's the first thing I thought
of. So a micro mistake like that.
When things are going bad, you look for reasons to prick you and get you started to see if I can underturn this rock and see what's under there.
Do you think sometimes that's, I don't know, this is going in a totally different direction this segment, but I'm actually kind of enjoying it. Do you think, I guess when you get into the grind of a season, I can completely understand. I mean, I think Ryan Leaf is a little over the top with his meltdown years ago, but I can completely see where if you see the same people coming in
for 162
every day
games
with the
bit,
same
by the way.
Damn questions.
But that's hard for the writer as well, and I respect
correct.
he or she has
so
a job.
So what does the writer ask that would be, like, how would you guys view that as managers and players? I mean, it's kind of tough to beat around the bush, yet at some token, you can hear when there's agendas from writers,
well,
too.
Well, Al says it right. It really depends on how this season is going. If you've had a nice, successful season, then you run into a little bit of a bump, whether it's a 1 or 2 week bump where why aren't you playing well, then you can answer that very logically without emotion. If you're hammered from day one, why are you striking out? Why are you doing this? Why did you give up that home run? Over and over, human nature says, ask me that question a little bit different. I might have a better
answer. So here's one way I ask it. It's very simple. And I think it gives ownership to the person being asked. Al's dying to hear how it is. He can't wait to hear
I'm
this one.
I'm folding my arms.
No, it's very simply. What are your thoughts on the game? And then that opens the door for you to say, you know what?
I can take that in any direction
correct,
I like, pretty much.
Correct. And, it's not me taking you in the direction I want to take you because I've half written my piece.
But here's the thing, and both Al and Pete. How many guys we've heard say they're too vanilla in the locker room? They're not enough personality.
Exactly.
We need this. We need some controversy. Why? It's not the player's job to respond with a controversial answer.
Did Roger Maris do
that? How is he going to make his situation better by saying something controversial? Even though, as a reporter, I just want to hear the truth. I just want to hear the truth come out of the mouth. Well, sometimes the truth shouldn't come out of a player's mouth because it has a negative impact on not only the team, the manager, the community, all that stuff comes into play when you make you answer a question.
Well, in what direction? I mean, what do you really want?
As the writer, you mean?
Yeah, as the writer.
Well,
what do you really want?
Usually,
if I tell you what's really going on in this clubhouse, I'd let go of the brotherhood, first of all.
Well, okay. So then do you think the media thinks they're part of the brotherhood?
When they want to be.
Okay.
Sometimes media guys get way too close to the players, so they lose their objectivity. So we always talk about what you see in front of the camera doesn't always transfer to behind the camera.
Correct.
And so, you know, are they going to be truthful in their reporting? Sometimes they are. Sometimes because of their relationship with certain players, they hold back as well. That's human nature. You don't want to hurt a friend or a relationship.
Sure.
You want to keep building that relationship because down the road, if I don't say something negatively about this young guy, young player, maybe he'll give me a great quote down the road. But if I hammer him early in his career, he's going to shy away from me.
Well, why wouldn't he?
Right.
Well, so it's a fine line, though, between getting too close and having a relationship that way where it becomes, you know, you're almost covering for a player. But then it also becomes you don't want to trash a guy either, and you got to maintain some sort of semblance, you know, trust and respect as well. It's an interesting thing.
Guys, I've always really respected the harder-edged columnists or reporters, especially the ones that walked in the locker room afterwards.
Yeah.
Because as a player, you just want the truth written. Even if he's writing the truth according to his eyes, don't put any extra in there like you're questioning my effort or my care and love for the game. Just call it how you saw it. And then come in and we can talk about it. But when you start saying, you know, I think he nonchalanted that ball. He should have had it. Wait a minute. Now you're questioning.
How often do you see that, or did you see that?
Well, you know what? It's in there. You just have to listen to some of the guys out there nowadays. They make these little jabs, and then the players are saying, well, how would he know? He's never played the game. That's how that stuff gets started. And a lot of reporters, not a lot, a few, throw out those innuendos, and you start to question whether a guy's effort is there or not when you need to talk more to the coaches, more to the staff members, because that's a daily grind. Gino, you've served that sentence.
Mm-hmm.
It's a daily grind, and sometimes a smile doesn't necessarily mean that I'm feeling great.
Yeah.
This is how I got to get through today.
Well, I don't think people really understand what a 162-game schedule over the course of time does as far as your regimented schedule of where you are, where you be, when you hit off the tees, when you do this.
You don't even know who you are half the time.
Yeah,
but if both sides, the journalist and the player, are truthful, you got to live with it and you're respectful.
Yes.
I mean, as a player, I don't respect certain guys who always are making excuses for their poor performance. Hey,
no, I don't either.
When you're in front of the camera and you stunk that particular night because it's 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts, I stunk. I got beat 4 bad at bats. I'm going to have to come back tomorrow if I'm in the lineup and do better. But to say, well, you know, it was day game after a night game or such, you know, whatever, that to me is a joke too. That's when you should get hammered as a player. It is what it is. You didn't perform real well.
You hear that a lot, you think?
I hear it too much.
Okay,
I hear it too much. Yeah, as a player, because we both played.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know when we stunk. So if a guy's going to put a mic in my face after I stunk, I did stink. I mean, I remember a game in right field I played against the Royals. I made 2 bad errors and gave up 3 or 4 runs. We ended up losing the game, and there's like 5 guys in my locker. I said,
couldn't wait to get
there. Yeah, but it is what it was. I was terrible. I was terrible today. I hope I get an opportunity to redeem myself tomorrow.
Right.
That's the game, though.
Right. That is the game. Failure.
And redemption.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's the part of, and when you get into the youth sports side of it, I don't think, well, I mean, but, yeah. Oh, that got you. But the truth is I don't think parents let kids try to redeem themselves.
Are you saying enabling children?
Well, yeah.
Everybody wins.
I mean, you know, whatever happened to the concept of roles that players play on a team, even if they're younger? I know we all want fair playing time. I get that. But you might be an outfielder by nature of how you play.
Sometimes exposes the weakness.
Well, which is fine.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's fine. If the parents want their kids out there, then they have to be willing to take it all.
But they have to accept failure to get to success. And I don't think that happens enough. And I'm wondering if that's permeating into the pro sports world now.
No, I mean, that's like, I'm a dinosaur when it comes to this topic, Wags.
I love it. I mean, that's why I'm going there.
It's hard. And I think it's how you develop kids at a very young travel age and what's important and being good teammates and not making excuses and holding yourself accountable. That can start at 8 years old. That's
absolutely
not too young. You know, if you make a bad play physically, you'll live with it. If you make a bad play mentally, we get better to not make that mental mistake again. That's how you get better. And that's when you get kids in high school in the community that, you know what, they're getting it. They get it. In college, the same thing.
Well, in life and in work and in the world, that's how it works. Everybody has roles. Tom Bernard is a superstar at Cumulus Radio in these hallowed walls.
Sure.
There's David Helmer. He's got a role. There's John Lastman.
Gino
he has
and I were
a role.
Bench players.
Ben Olson.
We had a role. Switch hitters. Pitch hitters.
But you're part of the team, and that's life. It's so when you go to work and do the things that you do, not everybody is the top sales performer. Not everybody's the president. It's the same
thing. There are people who sit down at the table and there's people who serve.
Absolutely.
You know, and I was a server. Kirby sat down at the table.
Yeah, I was.
You know,
plenty of times.
Those guys sit down and eat.
Well, here's a perfect example of Kirby.
Yeah.
So we had early hitting every year, right?
Yes.
And if you hit early, you shagged for the guys who were hitting early.
Yes, you do.
Well, we knew that Kirby Puckett was our guy. He can come down anytime he wants in the middle of the guy's round, and I'm going to hit 10, 20, 50 swings, and we're going to shag. And after Kirby hit, Kirby didn't have to go shag.
No.
Did that bother
somebody
me? Absolutely not.
Not.
He can go up and have a sandwich and relax for the first inning. That's the deal. That's the deal.
But
could
that,
Gene Larkin do that? Kirby Puckett would have had my head if I hit and walked up to the clubhouse.
But guess what you guys check at the door?
Our ego.
The ego.
You yes, you do.
Ding. So there you go. Are you playing bumper music? Oh, you are. I guess I got too much rock and roll drumming on this guy's world. We'll be back with more Twins Talk. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Why drink the water?
All right. I said, all right, we're still believing because we will not stop believing in this Minnesota Twins organization.
As you know what they used to say back in the day, Geno's heard this one a many a times. Lay it in there, buddy. He can't hurt you.
For those of you, you know what we need to do is see that little camera. Is that like a security camera up there?
Yeah.
We got to turn that into one of those like Howard Stern type things, you know, where you can see the studio because you needed
to dress
see.
A little nicer
you
then.
Needed to see Al.
You have
Newman.
To dress a little nicer too.
Well, I'm dressed just like you. Oh my God, the three of us look like we called each other. But we have Al Newman doing an absolute incredible demonstration of your former coach Dick Sutch's pitching.
Well, we're talking about batting practice. And if we have any listeners out there that were former Twins, they can attest that if you hit in Dick Sutch's group, you were more or less on punishment. Because there's no way you could have been expected to swing off of him every day.
This is what we're talking about. You know, you don't always have to tell the truth.
Yeah. Hey,
but
I'm
okay, to paint the picture.
My 230 average,
to paint the picture. Al Newman,
all I know is Kirby Puckett never had Dick Sutch as a pitcher.
And when he hit him, he refused to hit off of him.
Al Newman gets in this like windup where he like tucks the ball. See that? He sticks his tongue out.
Oh my goodness.
Did he stick his tongue out?
Yeah.
He did not.
Yeah.
The thing's rolling around.
You know, and people always ask you as an ex-player, what do you remember most about your career? Well, that is right up there.
Yes. But then he's got the stomping thing. Like, he's like 4 years old.
That's how he landed. I'm telling you the truth.
He did not.
Okay, Gino was here.
Yeah, I hit in group one a lot.
All I had to do was do the delivery, and he knew exactly.
You know what Gino said? What? He'd rather bunt.
Yeah. Yeah, I did a lot of that, man.
And then Al says, then we have to go get Randy Johnson later on in the week.
Yes, yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I had to face Randy Johnson.
Torrey Hunter was on Intentional Talk with the bearded Kevin Millar and Chris Rose, and he had this to say about what he would say about advice to himself. I thought this is great as an 18-year-old Torrey Hunter.
I would say to the 18-year-old Torrey, hey, be patient. You know, accept failure. It's going to be a lot of failure in your life, but use it to kind of make yourself better and mold you and make you the man you need to be. And when you have failures, you kind of make adjustments and you get better. And if I can go back and tell that 18-year-old Torrey, I say, hey, stop getting angry so much after you strike out. That's part of the game. Bounce back, make the adjustment, and be ready to go the next at bat. That's what I would tell the little young Torrey Hunter.
Guys, do young players really struggle with that notion of carrying at-bats with them all over the field?
Yeah, that, go ahead, Al.
I was going to say, first time they face failure in their life professionally, they're a professional player, big-time stud, bonus guy. Mm-hmm. Now they're getting beat.
And that's what separates good players from great players at the amateur level. The great players can shake off an at-bat. I mean, I always tell people, Ken Herbeck, to me, had the greatest mental approach. He just loved to play. Yeah, he had some bad games, and he, you know, took it out on the batting cage once in a while. But he had a tremendous view of the game, meaning that this is not life and death. This is, I'm a good player in a great situation. I'm not going to waste my time killing myself over a bad game. I'm going to come back the next game and play hard and love that particular game. I could not do that. That is my biggest regret in the big leagues. I always tell people, I was so worried about staying in the big leagues, I didn't enjoy being in the big leagues as much as I should have. It was a constant mental battle for me.
Al, same for you or no?
Yeah, you know, the part that Gino mentioned, as a backup player, that insecurity was always there. It was always that driving force in your heart. You know, like I tell a story. I got a card in the mail. Asked Tom Kelly. I said, this kid wants to know if I'm going to play on my birthday. It was a month away. He says, when's your birthday? I said, June 30th. He said, you should just worry about still being here.
Oh!
Well, that.
Absolutely.
That's the daily life of a backup player.
Yeah.
You know, so you're competing and you've got that edge on you at all times.
So a guy like Torrey can obviously help these younger players.
He was joking, by the way, but he didn't laugh.
Okay, gotcha.
I just didn't want to scare the people out there.
Okay. You scared me.
Yeah.
And I think I added to that.
I was,
like,
I was having flashbacks.
You know what angle I was throwing? That sounds like a blast. Sign me up. I'm in. Yeah. So, Torrey Hunter, a coach, you know, easier said than done, obviously.
But the thing is, it's great that Torrey says that, but it's very difficult when you're 18, have not experienced a great deal of failure to understand what he's saying.
Can you teach that, though, or no? Is that an individual
process?
I think it's an individual personality, too, and I mentioned Kent. I think probably I never knew Kent until he got to the big leagues, but I'm assuming in high school, in the minor leagues, he had the same approach about the game and life, and it rewarded him a great deal in the game of baseball.
Gino, that could be why we say the game slows down.
Right.
It's always been slow to those guys.
Exactly.
The great ones, that was the one thing that when I think of all the grit players I played with, I always think of how the game appeared to me by watching them. It looked like the game was in slow motion.
Who was it the slowest from your vision? Who did it look really slow for you?
Andre Dawson.
Awesome Andre Dawson.
Andre Dawson and Gary Carter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Tim Raines, Kirby Puckett.
Ken Griffey Jr. Just a natural out there that, wow, is it that easy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it that easy?
John Olerud, just to take a guy. A lot of people may not know, just looked easy. Roberto Alomar. Yeah, just a different.
The Hall of Fame players obviously have that knack.
Can we go on Ken Griffey for a second? Did he juice or not, in your opinion?
No.
That's what's even more impressive.
I don't think he did.
Yeah,
that was my feeling from what you can tell. Mm-hmm. And so it makes you feel as though of all of this generation, that guy was pretty darn special.
Yeah,
I mean,
no question.
Nobody really did what he did.
With a big smile.
And did it. Yeah. You know, and did it year in, year out. Couple of Twins notes for you. Taylor Rogers, you familiar with him, guys? Have you heard of him?
No.
I just want to throw this one out. He's 1-0 so far, the 2.37 ERA at Rochester after three starts. 26-16 with a 2.94 career minor league record and 11-6. Right now, he is on the short list of being one of the call-ups. And the reason
is
I bring that up.
Is he on the 40-man roster?
I'm not sure. I didn't even check.
You need to check that.
Well, let me get my book.
Yeah, go ahead.
He might be because he's whatever. We'll go from there.
Sorry about that.
So
yeah.
That's a good one. So then it comes down to Alex Meyer. Has a great outing. We hear all about this. We hear about these guys that are, you know, 25, 26 years old. Do you think a guy like that is ever going to break through?
The reason why I asked about the 40-man roster, and I apologize for cutting into you there.
No worries.
Is... you have to make a transaction to put him on the roster. Possible chance of losing somebody that you want to keep on the roster. So that would probably be, if he's not already on the 40-man roster, that would be why he would probably be the second choice, unless the Twins are just in a dire strait and they want to bring up an older pitcher.
I heard a discussion on somewhere, it wasn't on this station, but it was about Tommy Malone being moved on for Alex Meyer. Can you believe that?
No, not right now. I can't. I mean, Meyer did throw a good game in his other outing, but
one's a lefty, one's a righty.
Very inconsistent. Malone's done a great job here. He's done a nice job.
You got to have a lefty in the rotation.
Yeah, I would say that. So, you know, I don't think Tommy Malone has to worry about Alex Meyer right now. He keeps doing what he, like we always said, do what you're supposed to do, and you don't have to worry about the guy behind you. You know. If you don't, yeah, you should be worried.
Do what you're supposed to do,
exactly.
And it takes care of itself. Ricky Nolasco's start for today moved to tomorrow due to weather issues down with the Colonels of Cedar Rapids. I mean, he's got more starts from Cedar Rapids than he does here. I mean, is this a signing that's just going to go awry, or do you guys think he can actually get healthy and produce?
I hope he gets healthy. I hope it produces. But I know those major league pitchers don't like going on rehab assignments because those A-ball hitters, they wear them out. We talked about this last week.
They love the strikes.
And you're around the strike zone, they're ready to swing. Nolasco, I think the adjustment to the American League is going to continue a little bit this year, even when he does get healthy. But I think the fact that Maloney, Gibson, and those guys will be pitching better. He'll just filter right in and not be a step.
To me, Nolasco's got to the All-Star break. He better pitch well the next 2 months, because if he doesn't, he probably might be out of the rotation.
Can they trade that guy?
No, they gave him a lot of money, so he's not going anywhere in the short term here. But, you know, if you believe what the front office says, you want results, right? Not based on a reputation or money. If you don't get results, you're going to be put in the pen. And, you know, Pelfrey had a great start. He said, you know what, I'm going to show them that I can be a starter. He did last outing. Can he, you know,
maintain
it for the next two or three outings? But I give Nolasco to the All-Star break. If he doesn't pitch well, move on.
So we're saying we've got a couple-month window for him to really establish himself as the guy they believed he could be in the rotation, and it is a definite talker.
And then
you've
got Santana coming back, you know, after the All-Star game, too.
And
so.
You have to realize that he's a National League pitcher.
Yeah.
Maybe a National League team will take him back because he had success on that side. So it's not a bad contract.
Do you find that pitchers, mostly some players, you know, the National League guys versus the American League guys, once they dip their foot in the pool and they realize this isn't for them, they can't wait to get back to the other league?
I don't know why you want to pitch in the American League if you have an option.
Well, why would you?
I mean, if the money is similar,
I wouldn't.
I wouldn't want it, the extra hitter.
No.
No.
Well, that's just a hitter. Usually it's really good.
Well, yeah.
You know, you see Poppy every
you
other inning?
Great. I can't get away with hitting batters because I got a hit now. We won't go there.
The Kansas City Royals would love that one, wouldn't they?
The Fighting Royals.
We're already done, you guys.
Good hour today,
wow,
boys.
Wow, solid outing. Yeah, that was
even
a quality
after the hockey game.
That was a quality start. That's all we deliver.
Yeah.
David Helmer, great job back there. Al Newman, G. Larkin.
Boys.
I'm Pete Wagner. Till next week. So long, everybody.
We're out.